When I look back, I feel neither shame nor regret about my war against coffee, but sometimes I wonder why it had to be me, why I was the one who was chosen. I wasn't born to throw a man from a moving train and impale him upon a spike, or strangle a mass murderer above a bed of decaying takeout chicken, or shoot German aviators out of the sky above the Mediterranean, or obliterate soldiers in trucks on the road to Berlin, or settle the fate of a nonagenarian in a wheelchair by snapping his neck like a biscuit. What led me to such things? Was it coffee alone? I hate it. It has conquered the world. I lost to it a long time ago. My only option was to harry it until I die. But I cannot ever conquer it.
Writer Mark Helprin. His new book is a fable of love and loss, a song of the 20th century, and the story of a man with an unlikely enemy. It's called Memoir from Ant Proof Case, and Mark Helprin will be back in just a moment to read from and talk about his new novel. Welcome to Soundings, a magazine about books and ideas from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. Partial support for Soundings comes from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. One critic has called Mark Helprin's fiction vast, ambitious, spiritually lusty, and all-encompassing. In his new novel, Mark Helprin combines adventure, satire, the power of memory, and flights of imagination. The memoir of Helprin's title is no less than the history of the 20th century, narrated by an old man who lives in Brazil. His wife is young enough to be his daughter, his little son he adores. He sits in a mountain garden overlooking the ocean, carries a Walther P-88 pistol, and keeps his memoir in an ant-proof case. We learn that he's been a multimillionaire, familiar with popes and presidents, a fighter pilot, a passionate lover, a protector of the innocent. And all his life, he's waged a valiant but losing battle against what he sees as the world's most insidious enslaver and enemy of humankind, coffee. With an excerpt from Memoir from Ant Proof Case, here's Mark Helprin.
It isn't right to go on and on about coffee, and I never do. So I will end my discussion of it with the core of my case against it. Coffee is evil because it disrupts the internal rhythm that allows a man or a woman to understand beauty in all things. It speeds up the metronome that rests within the heart until the heart pounds forward like a locomotive off the rails. It blinds the eye to that which is gentle, shuttering the soul like a breech lock in a machine gun. We are all perfect clocks that the divinity has set to ticking when, even before birth, the heart explodes into its lifelong dance. If you doubt this, then why is it that a carioca at rest will start to drum his fingers? And why is it that a composition of notes and intervals can make us cry? And why is it that when men and women are drawn together in a fusing of spirit and body, they move, they dance, they come together rhythmically as in the ebb, the flow, and the rocking of the sea? This drive, this beat, this universal tempo is the powerful thing I know. It overrides all calculation and greed. It runs gracefully past almost every imaginable sorrow, and it imparts harmony and sense to many things that, absence its insistence and flawless syncopation, would seem to make no sense at all. But when the metronome of the heart is driven forward and the gentle pulsing of the soul attacked with a whip, darkness and misery come like storm. I know this, though I have never had coffee. I know it because I have not allowed the rhythm to be altered, and I never will.
Mark Helprin, welcome to the National Humanities Center.
Thank you.
Congratulations on this wonderful novel that you have written. I want to pick a fight here with you. What in the world have you got against coffee?
Who, me?
Yeah, you. I mean, this book, this demon that pervades this novel you have written.
What would ever make you think that I have something against coffee? I actually really don't have anything against coffee. I'll tell you, first of all, my objections to coffee are not ideological. Uh-huh. They're purely personal, and I really don't care if other people drink coffee. It is in the book, a literary device. It could have been tomato juice, could have been scrambled eggs, it could have been anything. But as it happens, when I was a child, I went to a school, which was a quite remarkable school. And in this school was a shop teacher whose name was Major Price, a veteran of the Spanish-American War.
Mm-hmm. You got a character like this in your book.
That's correct. And in other books, too, I preserved him. He's now dead. He taught wizardry, really, mechanics. Mm-hmm. We took apart Lycoming engines and cars and at a very tender age. And when we were very small, to teach us to use tools safely, power tools, machine tools, jigsaws, etc., he watched us carefully. And when we made what he called a basic operational safety mistake, or as he called it, a bosom, he called us up in front of the mast. He was a Marine.
Right.
And there was actually a column that held up the ceiling of his big shed. And on the column was a little shelf, and on the shelf were two little Dixie cups. And in each Dixie cup, there was a skull and crossbones. And in each Dixie cup, on one were brown coffee beans, and the other were green. And he would say, for example, "Helprin, get up here, two brown, one green." if I had put my fingers in the wrong place near the jigsaw or did something that imperiled my safety.
Right.
And then I would have to chew these beans. And because of that, perhaps, I have never in my life had a cup of coffee, ice cream, mocha, anything like that. I just have no desire to do that, and you can understand why.
Well, there is a scene like this in your book. It is a memoir from Ant Proof Case. Tell me, who is Oscar Progresso? He has a big order. I mean, we never really learned this guy's name.
It's not. It's one of his aliases, Oscar Progresso.
Juan Valdez.
No, that wasn't.
You dedicated it to Juan Valdez?
The book is dedicated to Juan Valdez.
That's right.
And as a tongue-in-cheek thing. But Oscar Progresso, otherwise known as at times as Franklin Nuts and Baby Supine, et cetera, all kinds of pseudonyms, is a man of this century. He was born at the beginning of it in 1904,
right,
which is an easy timeline for me because my father was born in 1904, so that I know my father's history almost better than I know my own. So I used that to put me in the right year in the right age, and I knew what he was doing and what kind of things he was feeling, what stage of life he was in, coordinate with certain historical events. He was in the war, as my father was, having volunteered at a rather late age, and his progression in life and business followed that of my father. Although this is not the story of my father, in case my father's listening anywhere, he should know.
but the novel nevertheless has a kind of a genealogical and autobiographical force for you. I mean, this is how you recover the spirit of the times that you're writing about.
Yes, it's. I was just asked recently why it is that I write about the whole century. Uh-huh. Almost every time I write, I write about the whole century. Well, one answer is that I have as my model Tolstoy, who looked back to the great war of the War of 1812, in which he did not take part. He was not in the Napoleonic Wars. He was too young, and he was not around at the time. But this is what he wrote War and Peace about. And I have believed ever since I was, I guess, a young student, that if you are going to be a writer, one of your responsibilities is to look at your times. And that means not specifically to look through a microscope at the very times in which you exist now, at the present, but rather in the 100 years or so that formed the present.
Well, what you're doing in the this wonderful voice that we listen to throughout Memoir from Ant Proof Case reminded me of a Robert Browning monologue. And, some people might say, well, that's a put-down. I don't mean it that way. I mean, those are wonderful, rich, textured characters who are speaking to us about a particular moment in time. And as you say, taking the long view, I mean, the sort of logic of the 20th century, that's what Oscar is writing about.
It's a retrospective. And at one point he says, I'm so old now that I can look forward to very little. I thought I would take one last look back.
Right.
And there's quite nothing to me as impressive and as desirable as a person who is old and who is not a fool, who is wise, looking back and assessing what they have seen, because they have an economy of speech.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps because they don't have much time left, they don't tolerate nonsense. They say what they mean in such a beautiful way, with such great compression, that it's the only thing that I can imagine that would make you look forward to being old.
Tell me about some of the wonderful things that happens to Oscar, or whatever name we choose to give to your narrator in Memoir from Ant Proof Case. He's a billionaire banker. He has unbelievable relationships, sexual and romantic and philosophical, with a series of wonderful women. He travels the world. He participates in the military. What doesn't happen to this guy?
Virtually nothing. But you know, the funny thing about it is that after all of that thrashing,
right?
After all the sexual thrashing and the robberies and his tremendous war experience, and the wonderful twists and turns that he goes through, and all the unusual things that happen to him, falling in love with Constance, who is a billionaireess, and then having to leave her, having her leave him, and all these wonderful things, actually, are just more, they're entertaining, and they carry you along, but they're window dressing, because what he is mining for in this memoir is the core of his existence. And actually what he's doing is essentially almost processing this in order to find from each episode, uh-huh, what it is that relates to the core of his life.
Well, now part of that would go to his relationship with his parents. I will leave it to you, Mark Halperin, to reveal to your readers and our listeners exactly what happens to Oscar that inspires his hatred of coffee, and that essentially becomes kind of the organizing plot for the Memoir from Ant Proof Case. But he's writing about his parents, and here you have something which is something happens to him. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you to run with this.
This is fascinating to me. Something just struck me. Here we are. We are sitting in the National Humanities Center.
Right.
And when I came in today, I saw a plaque on the wall about Charles Frankel.
Right.
Charles Frankel was a friend of my father from the war, when they both worked, I assume, in intelligence. It seems that way. And Charles Frankel was, with his wife, was murdered in a brutal fashion in Westchester County, where I lived with my parents. And in this book, the Oscar Progresso's parents were, I usually don't give this away, but it's okay, because believe me, the book will carry, even if you know this secret of it.
Right.
Oscar Progresso, and it's not really his name, his parents were murdered too in this brutal fashion, and his whole life is a life lived to express love and loyalty for them. And how does one do that when they're gone, when they're dead, when he cannot even, he thinks at first, catch the murderers?
He has to go on living in a world where they are not, and yet he is attempting to recover them, mm-hmm, to pay homage to them, to love them, to create a bond with them. This is a very big order that you have created for yourself as a writer.
And one of the ways that he does it is, as he says, to make his life a fiction, a metaphor. And one of the ways that he does it is by his hatred of coffee,
uh-huh,
because if you read the book, you'll see that it is casually intertwined with the murder, just by happenstance. So that his crusade against coffee, well, he doesn't even know it. Well, in the end, he may, but his crusade of coffee is simply a way of expressing, simply a way of expressing his love for his parents, to hold something irrationally, to hold to something irrationally and irrevocably and strongly, and simply to say no, like Melville's Bartleby, I would prefer not to. I believe that when people act irrationally, uh-huh, no matter how damaging it is, that most often, believe it or not, even if it's evil that they're doing, they are motivated originally from love.
And that's what happens with Oscar, as he looks back over his life and recovers the memory of his parents.
He does. Fortunately, mm-hmm, fortunately, he is moral. A lot of people don't understand that, because they think that he is essentially a criminal. In some respects, he is a criminal, but he's very careful to be moral, not to hurt others unless they themselves are evil or are in the midst of hurting someone else. He makes these distinctions.
Mark Halperin, I'm going to ask you to read another passage here from Memoir from Ant Proof Case, apropos of your reflections about the relationship between parents and children. This comes, here's a passage that comes toward the end of the book. Will you set this up for me?
This is the conclusion of the book, which more or less summarizes the motivating forces in this man's life. And we're giving it away, of course, but I think that it's okay. I was graduated from the finest school, which is that of the love between parent and child. Though the world is constructed to serve glory, success, and strength, one loves one's parents and one's children despite their failings and weaknesses, sometimes even more on account of them. In this school, you learn the measure not of power, but of love, not of victory, but of grace, not of triumph, but of forgiveness. You learn as well, and sometimes, as I did, you learn early, that love can overcome death, and that what is required of you in this is memory and devotion. Memory and devotion. To keep your love alive, you must be willing to be obstinate and irrational and true, to fashion your entire life as a construct, a metaphor, a fiction, a device for the exercise of faith. Without this, you will live like a beast and have nothing but an aching heart. With it, your heart, though broken, will be full, and you will stay in the fight unto the very last. Though my life might have been more interesting and eventful, and I might have been a better man, after all these years, I think I can say that I have kept faith. All this time, my heart has told me nothing but to love and protect. The message has been strong through the twists and turns, and it has never varied. To protect and to protect and to protect. I was born to protect the ones I love, and may God continue to give me ways to protect and serve them, even though they are gone.
Mark Helprin, we have just heard you read another passage here from your new book, Memoir from Ant-Proof Case. This is the voice of Oscar Progresso. You say at the beginning of your book, you quote Mr. Shakespeare in Hamlet, you say, "By indirections, find directions out." Tell us about how you structured this book and put it together, this long memory of recovering one's sense of oneself and one's parents.
The narrator says, I had intended to write my memoirs sequentially, but then I realized that I don't think about the past sequentially.
Who does?
No one does. I think about it the way a fisherman fishes. You throw in a line, right, and when you pull something out, you see what you've got. It could be a tuna, it could be a mackerel, it could be a swordfish, whatever. And therefore, he says, what I will do is I'll write it as it occurs to me, which is, of course, how we think about it and how we tell it. When we're speaking to people to whom we want to relate what has happened to us. And the novel is not sequential. This gives the added advantage of giving it a mysterious cast.
And yet it has a wonderful kind of flow to it. As I began the book, I thought to myself, well, now, this man hates coffee. We know that. We know that he lives an extraordinary life. But we have to wait until relatively late to figure out why all of these things come together. Nonetheless, you pull it off. I mean, you sustain that narrative with what do you want to call it? Memory, the texture of personal public history?
When you mention the flow, see, the flow is purely natural. It's as if you're sitting talking to somebody,
right,
and there's no artificial constraint or structure, and it's a purely natural flow. It's almost like gossip.
Right. It's like the river, the Hudson River. Now, let's pause on this for a moment. You are recovering in this book not only the inside of an 80-year-old man's mind as he looks back on the 20th century. The reviews have said essentially that Mark Helprin recreates a New York that is lost. Not only the city, but the state and that whole sort of Hudson River atmosphere. How did you go about that?
Well, I always do that. Whenever I write, I believe that I mean, the reason that I do what I do is because what I'm trying to do is to bring back the dead, to preserve the past, to keep alive that which I love. And one of the things that I love is my own past, which was lived right there, mm-hmm, on the Hudson and in New York City. In both in the state and the city of New York.
Is this what one would call formal research at work, or is this simply you sitting there with your pen or pencil or word processor and just thinking back about the things that you know and love?
Well, definitely the latter. Uh-huh. Although, obviously, when you're editing the book, which I do assiduously and very carefully over a long period of time, you have to check. If you make a statement from memory, you say that such and such a thing happened in such and such a place, or that you can see right. something from this point of view, then you must check, although at times you take poetic liberties.
Uh-huh. How about the invention of some of these extraordinary characters that you have come up with? I mean, Oscar himself is the main example, but the women in his life, Constance and Marlise, and who's the one early when he's in the sanatorium?
Miss Maevska.
Do you know people like this, or I want to get a sense here of imagination and experience.
Actually, yes. As far as those that you've mentioned, Miss Maevska, my wife's maternal maiden name actually is Maevska. And if you notice, very carefully mentioned in there that she was the true love of his life. Had to do that. As far as Constance, the billionaires, goes, right. I had the good or ill fortune to go to a lot of elite universities where in the 60s, when I was young and running around all over the place, many of my girlfriends were actually heiresses, and two actually were literally billionaires.
So there's Constance.
How
about Marlise?
Marlise, there's a little truth in Marlise too, a
tropical
hot
flower.
Tamale, yes. But I don't think I should be talking about this on the air.
Let me ask you about the villain in this book. His name is Edgar. What is it, Edgar?
Eugene B. Edgar.
That's right. And his initials, we don't want to give this away, but his initials are very important to sort of bringing the whole plot together. Did you pick a businessman, a banker type as a villain? What is this? Are you preaching the evils of capitalism here?
Oh, no. In fact...
Preaching against, I should say.
The narrator himself has been a capitalist. I mean, he is an investment banker, and although he turns against many facets of it, his many asides in this, for example, in the chapter about Miss Maevska, he delivers a wonderful broadside against Marxism.
Mm-hmm.
And he repeatedly delivers other casual broadsides against socialism and democratic centralism and all of that. This is not an anti-capitalist book by any means. On the other hand, the villain does represent the impersonal, inhuman, and occasionally evil characteristics of any organization, whether it be an organization which is based upon capital, which his was, or an organization based upon the power of the state, mm-hmm. which would be the opposite, I mean, a socialist type of organization. But any kind of organization which has its own needs and tramples over humanity, individually or collectively, is exactly what it is that this man, Eugene B. Edgar, represents. In this case, for his needs, for the needs of his organization to make more money, to build a bridge, he did something very, very evil.
You want to take this farm away from this family.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's certainly not an indictment of the role of capital, because look at the way that this was done under Stalin in a far worse way and magnified.
Mark Helprin, again, your book is Memoir from Ant-Proof Case. What's the responsibility of a writer such as yourself, a novelist? I mean, after all, you send this stuff out into the world, it circulates, it affects people. And how do you think of what you do and how it impacts the public?
Well, first of all, when I'm doing it, I don't think of that. It's solely personal. But if I assess it later on, I hope for the best, my aim would be, A, to always to be a moral. To be moral, and I suppose you could say, although it sounds awful, uplifting.
Uh-huh. Well, this is Oscar talking after a fashion, isn't it?
I suppose so. I wrote the book.
After. Yeah.
and of course to entertain and to do so in the highest way is very, very important.
Uh-huh.
I detest the way that the culture has turned in terms of tawdry entertainment, the lowest common denominator, and sensationalism. I will never do that, and I remain confident that one can be truly entertained and can have a very good time with something which is on a much higher level.
Mark, let's move toward a conclusion of our conversation about your new book, Memoir from Ant-Proof Case. This book is about the power of love. isn't it? About parents and children and what it means to look backward and forward and to live in a world of love that one is secure in. That is very noble. It's also very, very fragile in our world. What were you up to here?
It's also the strongest thing that is left to us, the only thing that lasts. And that's quite so. All my books are about more or less that, about, believe it or not, God. If you look, and I've written 7 books, and no one has picked this. It's strange how reviewers, they skate through things, you see. They read them so fast. Some of them don't even actually read. Most of them actually just skim through the book. But every single book, and every single last sentence of mine in the books ends with one word, the last sentence anyway. As in this book I read, I can read it over, the last sentence, and may God continue to give me ways to protect and serve them. God. Every book ends with a prayer, really. They are religious books, but they are it's subtle enough so that most people don't even know that. And however, religious people often respond very strongly to them because they do. But to the secular people, they seem not to be religious books. It's quite extraordinary because every single one actually is.
Well, I congratulate you on providing a sort of testimony or a testament here again to the power of love and families. It is an extraordinary book, and I want to commend it to our listeners and your readers. You are Mark Helprin. The new novel is Memoir from Ant Proof Case, meaning, in other words, what your narrator, Oscar, uses to hold all of these memories that he is putting together from that mountaintop in Brazil. Mark, thank you so much for coming by the National Humanities Center. I certainly wish you well in your work.
Thank you so much.
Mark Helprin is the author of Memoir from Ant Proof Case, a novel available from Harcourt Brace. Mark Helprin's other books include A Soldier of the Great War, Winter's Tale, and Ellis Island and Other Stories. You're listening to Soundings, a radio magazine about books and ideas from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. Audio cassettes of this program are available for $10 postpaid. Our address is Soundings, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. Our zip code is 27709. Please ask for program number 782. That's $10, program number 782. The address again is Soundings, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. Our zip code is 27709. Next week on Soundings, Murder and the Gothic Imagination in American Culture. Join me for a conversation with historian Karen Haltonen of the University of California. Partial support for Soundings comes from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. Our theme music is by Jeff Perry. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center. New fiction from prize-winning author Mark Helprin this week on Soundings. Mark Helprin will be here to read from and talk about his new novel. It's called Memoir from Ant Proof Case, the recollection of an 80-year-old man whose life is a song of the 20th century. Adventure, war, wealth, love, and loss, not to mention a lifelong battle with the unlikeliest of enemies, coffee. Memoir from Ant Proof Case, a powerful and sweeping new novel from writer Mark Helprin, this week on Soundings.